From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 478, Moving Public Folders to the Cloud with guest Tony Redmond. Recorded Thursday, June 2nd, 2016. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. My guest today is the one and only Tony Redmond, who works as the principal of his own consulting company, Tony Redmond & Associates, helping companies figure out specific technology strategies and goals. Apart from his experience gained over 27 years in digital, compact, and HP, 10 as a vice president, Tony remains a practicing technologist and is a Microsoft Most Valuable Professional MVP for Exchange Server. Welcome back, sir.
Thank you, Richard. It's always great to be talking with you.
You are like my reliable touch point for all thing Exchange. If Tony's okay, then we're all okay.
Well, you know, that's nice of you to say that. Actually, I'm doing an awful lot more Office 365 these days, which I guess it just reflects the way the market is going. I still have a huge grawl, which is the Irish word for love for Exchange, because clearly I've spent an awful lot of time. And of course, this year marks the 20th anniversary of the first release of Exchange. But you know, time moves on. And we all get a little bit older, bits start falling off and drooping and all that sort of stuff. And I guess, I just go with whatever the work is out there and the work that's out there. And the stuff that I'm doing is pretty well all around Office 365 these days.
And 365 includes the mail part, right? But more?
I think a really big mistake that a lot of people make is that they just regard Office 365 as the cloud versions of the on-premises applications. That was absolutely an accurate and valid assumption to make a number of years ago, but the way things have matured now, I think Office 365 is so much more than the cloud versions of these on-prem apps. If only because, well, what I've been telling people is, look, Microsoft just now treating Office 365 as a parts bin. There's a whole pile of different stuff in there. Exchange is there to provide an email service. SharePoint is there to provide storage. You got Azure Active Directory there for authentication. You got built into that and everything. And then go wild. Yeah, and by the way, you've also got Azure Media Services, Azure Data Services. All that stuff exists. And the great thing is that from an engineering perspective, is that Microsoft can just look at it and say, well, all this stuff works. It's all integrated. We've made it. So now I can build on the basis that I know that all of these things are going to be available to me, which is the reason why over the last couple of years, they've been able to come up with applications like Office 365 Groups, Office 365 Planner, Office 365, the video app, the video portal. They haven't quite got realized the potential that they talked about last year when they talked about a new knowledge management portal, which they named Infopedia. But you know, you see some of that in Delve. And I believe that this is because they achieved stability, they achieved a certain amount of maturity, and now the engineers are basically going wild building stuff based on all of these common components, which is really good. So Office 365 is so much more.
Well, and these are all things in theory we could have done on-prem, right? If you were responsible for the file storage, CMS side, as well as your messaging and so on, there were these integration opportunities. I just don't know that we did them.
Because they were too complex.
They were hard. Yeah.
Yeah. And they took too many resources, and they took too much technical expertise. But anytime a service pack came out, anytime an update came out, it broke stuff.
Yes.
And that was the horrible thing. I mean, I'm not allowed to say that word, but I had a very bad thought. about the engineers who built the integration between SharePoint 2013 and Exchange 2013.
Oh my.
Years ago.
It's not that long ago, my friend, but we all remember.
You know, the Kool-Aid was flowing. And I had bought into the whole thing that, oh yeah, Exchange, SharePoint, they're going to go off to the sunset, live happily ever after. They're great buddies because they're all sharing these components like the Search Foundation. And then, oh my gosh, when you tried to put the two of them together and there was this 492 different steps, all of which were torturous, involving PowerShell this and PowerShell that and hoping this worked and hoping that worked. Oh, it was dreadful. Dreadful. It was enough. It aged me overnight.
Yeah.
I've never been the same since.
Well, and I mean, Planner, Delve, like these tools that are only in 365 sort of speak to, this is where innovation is happening in this space. If you want this stuff, it's going to happen here first. is a question of it'll ever turn up on-prem, much less would you will be willing to run it if it did.
It's not going to. This type of stuff is not going to. Anything that touches machine learning is not going to turn up on-prem for quite a while, simply because of two factors, I believe. Well, I'll throw in three. One is complexity. The second is that the algorithms that power all this stuff, you know, for example, if you go to, you click on SharePoint, the link in the Office 365 portal app, it'll show you some suggested sites. If you go to video, it shows you some suggested videos, much like all the stuff that you see on Amazon, you know, things we've found that we think you should look for, or you might like looking at. And all of this is powered by machine learning. That kind of, those algorithms are being tweaked all the time. And there's one thing we know about on-premises IT is that people hate updating their servers.
Yes.
You know, so there's no way Microsoft could pump out all of these updates and stuff like that, little tweaks to make things more efficient and so on. Because we know.
We would never do it. We haven't got the time.
Right. And then the third thing is the sheer amount of machine resources. There isn't an IT shop in the world, even the largest of them, that can afford to deploy 20,000 servers just to try something out.
Right.
So
when it comes to Exchange, and
yes.
I mean, I look at Exchange these days, I mean, let's face it, mail is a utility, right? That's one of the reasons we're willing to just go to this completely stable, I don't want to think about this anymore, I just need to have it. But there's one part of Exchange that has always been a sticking point for people, and it's this bloody public folders.
Well, again, rolling back the years.
It was such a good idea at the time, and it's how people actually used mail. That's how people use mail. They use their attachments as a file store.
Well, yeah, but no, let's go back even further. In days of yore where knights were bold, and everybody was afraid of meeting a knight in a dark night. I don't know where I'm going with that. Anyway, long time ago, 1995, when Microsoft started to talk about Exchange 4.0, read it publicly, they started chatting about these things called public fora. Now, if you looked at the competitive landscape at the time, Lotus Notes was it. And Lotus Notes was great. And a big thing about Lotus Notes is they had replication.
Mm-hmm.
Databases were replicated, even mail databases were replicated. That's the way Notes did stuff. Microsoft's response was to bundle in this repository, which had its own database, the public folder database. We had its own forms designer, an 8-bit forms designer. Goes back that far. And sorry, no, it was a 16-bit. I think it was a 16-bit. I think it was.
They weren't very good bits, though.
They weren't very good bits. Those last 8, they were very doubtful. And they came up with this replication scheme, which meant that Exchange servers could chat to each other and say, yo, have you got anything for me? Yeah, I got something for you. Hey, here you go. Bang. And they produced all sorts of funky apps. My favorite one, of course, was the playing chess, right?
Right.
You could move into a public folder and it would replicate over to another server and the guy you were playing would say, oh, that's an intelligent move, and would respond, and you would replicate, and everybody would be happy. Now, that was 1996. 20 years on.
Literally 20 years on.
Literally 20 years on, because the anniversary of the Exchange is around the end of March.
Mm-hmm.
We have the great unwashed cockroaches of Exchange. They have been, Microsoft has done over the years to eliminate public folders from their product.
How many times have they announced, yeah, we're dropping support for public folders? I mean, it's amazing.
No. They've never really done that, because that would just unleash a crescendo of doom over their heads as customers. There are some customers, Richard, there are some customers out there with terabytes of public folders. Terabytes. And, you know, their public folder hierarchies may span hundreds of thousands of folders. And it's like this big fuzzy ball of stuff that nobody really wants to get too close to, because nobody understands why half of those public folders were ever created, whoever wanted them, what they were ever used for, whether what data they hold, whether that data is good, bad, indifferent. It's horrible. It's a horrible, horrible, horrible mess. Now, Microsoft has, you know, they've hinted over the, I mean, there was the great hope, for example, of Exchange routing objects around 1999.
Ah.
That was going to take mail flow to a different dimension. There were all sorts of CDO and stuff like that that came along and said, oh, we'll do great things with this. We'll build applications. We won't have to use those public folders anymore. Nothing ever really worked. Even they tried to position SharePoint. SharePoint, I think, probably 2003 and 2007 said, yeah, move everything over to SharePoint. But that was a disaster, because SharePoint required so much resources and so many licenses, and it was expensive. And public folders just worked, and they were part of Exchange. You didn't have to pay anything. And hey, well, why would I bother? So the point is that we reach today, 20 years on, and companies have these terabytes of data in public folder hierarchies that are absolutely uncontrolled. They spread like fungus, public folders. And they get everywhere. And they are really hard to eradicate. Now, sure, you know, if you're looking at the cloud, you can say, do you know what? I'm going to bring all my public folders to the cloud. And yeah, that's possibly a good thing to do, as long as you do it from when they're old style public folders and you don't do an on-premises migration to new style public folders, to what they call modern public folders. Because if you do that, you're not going to move the modern public folders to Exchange Online in Office 365 because Microsoft haven't yet sorted out the migration for that yet. So there are all sorts of twists and turns. But anyway, the good news is that people are waking up and they're looking at public folders and they're saying, you know what, we got to do something about this.
I don't want this in my life anymore either.
Right, exactly. And recently, over the last month, we've seen two ISVs come out with solutions which are interesting because they use different techniques, but they both target the migration of public folder content to Office 365 groups. Now, I think that's absolutely a great place to go because Office 365 groups, to me, are things that public folders could actually have been, you know, the foundation for team-based working. Public Office 365 groups out of the box give you a shared mailbox, a shared calendar, a shared notebook, a shared document library, even a shared plan if you combine it with Office 365 Planner. It's really, really, really good. You can even combine it with Power BI and get a shared analytics if you like, and with Dynamics CRM to get customer tracking. So, you know, Office 365.
And this sort of speaks to what we, in theory, using public folders for, was trying to get, because the alternative was you kept all these attachments in your email, and when that person left the company or was unavailable for any reason, like you were basically missing those resources. We were trying to create a place where other people could go, associated information around email. So it sounds like the group is kind of the modern version of that, admittedly only on Office 365.
That's true, and they will never come to on-premises, so let's kill that fairy tale right up there.
So this is one of these things that's grown out of going beyond Office in the cloud into this new set of product capabilities. And it's not just file storage. I mean, clearly there's a library piece to this for shared files and folders.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. When you create an Office 365 group, basically instructions are sent out to different workloads. So Exchange gets an instruction. That's the reason why it sets up group mailbox and a group calendar. And then the first time that a member of that group wants to access documents or share documents or set up some sort of shared area for people to put the files they've been working on, a hidden site collection in SharePoint Online is set up for that group. And that's composed of a document library, which now has been upgraded quite recently. So it looks, feels, behaves an awful like what people would call a regular SharePoint document library in a team site. And basically that's it. And it all happens automatically. You don't have to do anything. You just get on with it. So it's a really nice sharing structure. It's a really good place to go and get work done. And it's what public folders should have been. And better still, all of the information that you put in these groups is exposed for compliance. It's indexed, searchable. So it's not like the old public folders where basically stuff would just disappear into the black masses and you would never see it again.
There seems to be an implication of structure here. There's a way this is going to look. It's like they've almost grabbed the governance piece they've always tried to figure out in SharePoint and added it to this group.
Well, I wouldn't quite say. That sounds as if an awful lot of planning went into it. I'm not sure I would go that far.
Okay.
I would say what happened is that when they introduced Office 365 groups in November 2014, there were lots of different holes in the compliance story. In fact, they didn't have a compliance story. But because Exchange Online has a big compliance story, because Microsoft has been investing in the compliance piece of Exchange since 2010.
And they've needed to as well, because, I mean, Exchange has been the center of how many legal cases? Like, it's discovery through Exchange folders, not a small thing.
Oh, I spent days talking about that. And we maybe will return to that topic. But the thing is that because Exchange had that heritage, some of the stuff started to move across to Office 365 groups. And SharePoint had its own kind of heritage. I mean, SharePoint has been a little bit behind an Exchange in things like data loss prevention and so forth and so on. And in fact, some of the basic compliance pieces like preservation of information. But the two base products that provide the essential underpinning for groups were both getting upgraded or enhancing their compliance features. So it didn't take long to move those compliance features into Office 365 groups, which is what we have today. And in fact, they actually, one of the biggest issues that Microsoft had to deal with was the fact that Office 365 groups have got a single identity, which is the group, and everybody within the group shares the same access to everything else. So that means that if I'm a member of a group, I can go to any resource owned by the group and I can interact with it in the same way that anybody else can. Now, that sounds very elegant, very simple, and very smooth than it is. But it poses a little difficulty on the security side if you want then to have private groups, which they do have, because then private groups have got to be restricted to just the group members. But the group membership is represented by the group, which is a security principle. Can that security principle be brought forward and interpreted in the context of a single user when a single user is attempting to do something like search for documents or indeed use Delve to see what's going on around them?
Absolutely.
So as I understand it, this posed some interesting technical challenges in resolving, because if you take Delve, for example, one of the biggest guarantees that Delve lives up to is that Delve, although it will show you interesting documents that other people are working on, you can only ever see information that you are
authorized to see. Tony, give me 1 second here to pay the bills, because this episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by Chef, the automation platform for the DevOps workflow. You can use Chef to automate and manage it all: infrastructure, runtime environments, and applications. Chef works in the cloud or in your data center on physical servers, virtual machines, and containers. Get started with Chef today at chef.io/runasradio. I'm just fascinated by this emergent product. I mean, what you're talking about, right? Is that they put these pieces together, like, oh, we have all these bits. And then along comes this security problem. And this is where we've gotten trouble on-prem. How coherent are your security profile rules? Are your roles and so forth? How many times have people not seen files because they didn't know to look, not because they're secured properly?
So this is the really interesting thing I think you're poking at, is the fact that what Delve really does in an Office 365 contest is it exposes all the really bad security practices that have been going on for years.
Exactly.
Without a doubt. People just don't pay attention. They don't pay attention when too many people have administered permissions. They give out access to document libraries and never check to see whether those permissions are actually needed going forward, after a year.
They could have even been temporary, right? Just for this project and never revoked.
Exactly. So there's a Delve, unfortunately, or fortunately, I think it's fortunate, it exposes those type of shoddy practices. So it could mean that when you run Delve and you look at, oh, that's an interesting document, you find out layoffs 2017. And that's simply because the HR department has said, oh, anybody can look at this, or has put a document into a team site or a document library where anybody literally can look at it because that's what the permissions say.
Right.
So, I mean, Delve is, remember, I mean, we're talking about computer code here, so it's stupid. So it says, oh, okay, layoffs 2017. Tony, be interested in that. I must show him documents trending around you. How about this, Tony? And it doesn't interpret and say, ooh, layoffs, that's a bad word. Maybe I don't want to show that. Computers don't think like that. They just do. So if you've got very bad security practices, you are going to see all sorts of interesting opportunities to share information with people that you never knew you wanted to share.
Actually, I'm pretty sure you knew you didn't want to share with them. You didn't realize that was going to happen. Like this is the land of unintended consequences. That's what this is.
Yeah, but you later on, you realize that sharing is caring. I mean, Barney the Purple Dinosaur says that. So that's, if you have a document, you might as well share it. Huh? So groups, getting back to where we are.
And this seems to be the home for public. This is the super public folders, what public folders should have been in the first place. Not just file storage, but also all the paraphernalia around the idea that this is a significant gathering of people and information for the organization.
The way I would put it is that public folders never received the development attention over the years, which would have allowed them to become something more like groups.
Right.
And what happened is that people cobbled together their own solutions. I mean, the most common cobbling is where you take a public folder, you mail enable it, and you add the public folder to a distribution group. So that means that any mail sent to that distribution group is copied to the public folder, which then becomes the de facto archive.
Yes.
But, that's not particularly user-friendly. It's effective insofar as notes are all archived, or the messages are all archived, and they end up in the public folder, but it's not particularly user-friendly, and anyway, it belongs to the thinking of the past, whereas what we've got today is where people have actually said, and specifically about public folders, we've got all this stuff over here in these repositories which are not particularly good. What would happen if we looked at those repositories and moved them over to this new stuff? Wouldn't that be a good idea? And yay, it would be a good idea, because it actually, for the first time, gives enterprises a real hope of being able to move that stuff forward. Now, let me say this first. Crap in equals crap out.
That's what I was thinking.
So, if anybody was to over-enthusiastically go and move all of their public folders over to Office 365 groups, it would be an unmitigated disaster.
So, I make a group called Public Folders. I include everybody in it and haul all that stuff up.
Yeah, that sounds like it. Are you a system architect by any chance? Anyhow, so we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. And in fact, both of the products that I want to talk about are take a different attitude towards making that call about what should be moved. Mm-hmm. So the first product is from Binary Tree. It's in their E2E Complete product, version 4.1. And basically, this requires the administrator to make a decision that they want to move a public folder. So some upfront thinking has got to happen. The administrator has got to figure out what public folders they, if you want to move over to this new platform. Mm-hmm. So the Binary Tree have given some indications of the kind of public folders they think would be good. You know, ones that are in active use, ones that are mail-enabled, ones that have a lot of users who access the content, and ones that don't contain task items or journal items are indeed just plain documents. But any posts, including that have attachments, any calendar data, they can all be moved across to Office 365 groups. And basically, posts become conversations in the group. The attachments are remain attached to the conversation items, and calendar items go over into the group calendar. So that's all pretty well. And the basic thing is that, you know, as part of your migration to Office 365, which you are already doing with E2E Complete, you will now be able to do public folders and you'll be able to move them over to Office 365 groups. And that, I think, is a nice way to approach it.
Awesome.
However, the big problem that a lot of people have is that they simply don't know what they have in public folders. I mean, if you take a public folder hierarchy that's got 100,000 folders, any of the kind of migrations that have occurred, any of the analysis, the migrations that have occurred recently for these very large hierarchies will tell you that 30 to 40% of that hierarchy is composed of folders that are only subfolders and holding folders because they've got lots of nested folders underneath it. So in fact, they make up the structure, the branches, if you like, of the hierarchy that lead you eventually out to where the data is. So that's the first issue. The second issue, like nobody really knows what stuff is there that's buried. For example, you may have a public folder that contains, might be a lot of interesting information, but nobody can actually access it because all of the people who are on the access list have left the company.
Right.
And their accounts have disappeared.
Yep.
So the second approach, which is an interesting one, I think, is taken by Quadrotech, which is a company headquartered in Switzerland. And what they've done is they've built an analytics engine, which they built into a product that is still codenamed. It's going to be apparently released at the Windows Partner Conference in Toronto in July. So the product is codenamed Atom. And what it does is it will go and analyze a complete public folder hierarchy. And then it will make recommendations to you to say, well, you know, by the way, we've gone through your entire hierarchy, which may take a while, but we found these 472 public folders that are actively used. They've got reasonably new content. You know, like content has been added there in the last 2 weeks, let's say. It's got content that we can migrate and nadi nada. And then it's just up to the administrator to say, oh, it seems like a good idea. Go and move those over there and blow away the ones out of the public folder tree. So it's two kind of different approaches. If you take the binary tree approach, it's all part of, you're just integrating it into the migration process for the entire move over from Exchange on-prem to Exchange Online. The Quadratech solution is, I think, aimed at more of, well, okay, let's take public folders as a discrete project that we've got this big hunking hierarchy. Nobody can get to grips to it. So what we're going to do is we use analytics to take a grip over that hierarchy and tell me what I need to do.
I mean, I kind of like doing some analysis, like studying the landscape before we do anything.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, that seems like a wise thing to do just from the point of view of why would you lift stuff that's inert? We want to deeply believe that what's sitting in public folders is corporate knowledge, right? Is that institutional knowledge? But it's not necessarily true.
Oh, it's institutional knowledge if you like pawing back through items that have been around for 10 years or more and you want to say, oh, you know, hey, Joe Smith in 2004, he had a good idea. Pity Joe died that year.
Right.
Something like that. Or, gee, Nancy over there, I knew her when she was working in that department, but she's gone on to do other things. All those ideas that she put into that public folder never came to anything. Oh, well. I mean, that's the kind of stuff. I'm joking to make it, to highlight the case. But in reality, even if you take a legal view of the situation, it's highly unlikely that there is anything in a public folder that's older than a couple of years that needs to be retained. Because if you are using public folders to store really important corporate information, I would hope over the last 20 years you would have moved that to a more secure, comprehensive kind of repository, such as SharePoint.
So, and it speaks to this idea that the stuff definitely decays over time, becomes less valuable as it gets older.
Oh yeah, well, it's just like blogs these days. Books, indeed. And there was a time where you could sit down and you could write something, you could say, well, that's good. That'll last 3 months before a change is made. Oh man. I mean, when Microsoft came out last year in August to 2015 and said, hey, guess what? We've made 450 changes inside Office 365 in the last year. I mean, I'm sure people's brains popped.
Yeah.
Because you're thinking, how do I deal with this?
Yeah.
Just how do I deal with that level of change?
Constant evolution. It's not realistic now to do what you used to do, which is that you would test every one of those things yourself.
But that's true. Well, I mean, Richard, look, I mean, even you make a radio show today. Mm-hmm. I mean, how long is that the content of a radio show valid?
Well, that's an interesting question. You know, every so often you get a show that has a lifespan that's longer than the current version of the product, but most of them are product specific. And as the products age out, so does the relevance of the show.
Yeah, that's exactly true. I mean, we put together, Paul Cunningham, Michael Van Horenbeek, and myself, we put together this Office 365 book, this ebook. And we deliberately chose e-publishing to do it because we said, well, there's no way that the traditional publishing model can actually deal with the rate of change that's there.
Right.
So we actually update the book every week.
Wow. So the book stays alive.
It's the only way we found. Some weeks, you know, we're a bit tired and we don't do it. But other weeks, there might be two updates, you know, and it's just, and we hear about things like everybody else hears about them. We hear about them in Microsoft blog post, or a friendly engineer gives us a heads up about something, or we hear about it from a customer, or we just hear about it in Twitter, maybe, you know, so we're constantly refreshing. You know, we've got now the latest one, which actually just released today. It's 400,000 words long, over 800 pages. So we are constantly updating that just to, you know, I'll give you a good example. A guy told me last week, he stunned me. He said, this PowerShell commandlet that I've been using for years. He says, have you noticed that there are three new parameters in it? And I said, no. How would I notice this? And he says, oh, well, I was just, you know, as you do with PowerShell, you know, you sit there and you idly tab through the available parameters. And these three new parameters turned up. Now, well, A, I don't do that for much. You know, because I'm not that bored, but thanks very much. That's a great tip. That's the kind of thing that happens all the time. You just find out what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah.
This world of technology, I mean, my gosh, the acquisition of knowledge is just an incredible challenge. It really is.
Well, the Office 365 for IT pros, obviously available right now. This looks fantastic. And like you said, this is the modern book. This is the constantly evolving knowledge set for knowing where Exchange really is, if Exchange is what you care about.
Well, if Office 365 is what you care about, because one of the interesting thing, we started off to do an Exchange online book, but I think we have changed our attitude and we've changed the way we approach Office 365. So now, whereas there is a lot of Exchange content in Office 365 for IT pros, there's probably only 60% is Exchange.
Wow.
The rest of it is SharePoint, OneDrive, Delve, Delve Analytics, Advanced Security Management, Data Protection. We've got some great information about advanced e-discovery that people would even know about. And I didn't know about it until I actually sat down with those engineers and said, wow, this is what you guys do. You got the ability to conduct a search over 200 million documents online.
That's amazing.
And then you can reduce by going through a learning process to create a benchmark that you're going to analyze other documents against. You can actually focus in on, out of those 200,000 documents, let's say the 15,000 that a legal investigator really needs to look at. I mean, that's that kind of technology, which is enabled by the machine learning resources and the sheer power, the server resources and the storage that's available in the cloud. It's just phenomenal. You know, and our building the book that we've done is it just forced us into all of these interesting areas of Office 365 that people possibly wouldn't go into if you didn't have to. Another example of that is that Microsoft announced their advanced security management for Office 365 yesterday, in fact, June 1. It's a kind of an interesting thing because it's a link up with their cloud app security, and it builds off an initiative that they did last year where they established this unified audit repository where they gathered in audit logs from all around Office 365 and Azure Active Directory. And they're now analyzing it and making it available so that they're picking up weird and wonderful events that administrators need to look at. And the kind of interesting thing that you pick up there is that, hey, this is how they're going to make some serious money, because you have to have the E5 plan or you're going to be paying an extra $3 a month per user to have their security data analyzed. So it's a different world. It really is a different world.
It sure is. Well, and I think back to the shows we've done together over the past few years, it's like there's almost a chronology there we could pull out of how we have changed our thinking about Exchange.
Yeah, I think just looking at some of the earlier ones, we complained an awful lot about the cumulative update.
Yes. Remember when that was a problem?
Oh my God. You know, they were changes every 3 months. Now we're getting changes every 3 days.
Right.
Oh my gosh. You know, and that's only happened, when Microsoft, they released Exchange 2013 in October 2012. So the first cumulative update was in early 2013. So that change is 3 years.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Wow. Look at us. Old and gray, but still learning.
Still finding a way forward. Tony, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
All right, Richard. Be good.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.